John Hodson, and I'm doing an oral history interview for the project, The Spirit of Survival, Voices from the Depression. And this afternoon, I'm visiting with Ed Pursley in his home in Lingle, Wyoming. The date is July 30th, 1985. Ed, when were you born?
I was born in 1913 in Kokomo, Indiana.
In Kokomo, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
How long, Ed, did you stay in Kokomo? Did you go to school there and grow up there, or what?
I went through the eighth grade in Kokomo. We moved out here in 1928 and finished high school. Went to high school at Veteran, Wyoming. Graduated in 32.
Now, that's quite a few years, from 1913 to 1928. How many were in your family?
There was five boys and one girl.
And whereabouts were you, Ed? Were you?
I'm about fourth, one down the line. I have two younger brothers.
And what did your folks do back in Kokomo?
My father worked for the Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company. He was an engineer in the power plant there.
And did your mother work, or?
No, she had her hands full raising the boys.
Did you move then in 1928 directly from Kokomo to the Veteran area?
Yes, we moved 1928 to a farm in the Veteran area. It was actually southeast of Lingle and Goshen Hole.
What possessed your father, who worked in a plant back there in Kokomo, to suddenly take up farming? Did he have a background in farming, or what was the cause of that?
Not necessarily. His brother, Henry Pursley, homesteaded in that area in 1913, and they moved out in 14. We came out on a visit in 1926. Dad liked the country, and we decided to make the move. We did in 28.
Did it look like a pretty good opportunity to come to that area at that time?
I think so. At that time, everything looked good. Seemed that crops were good, and the economy was pretty good in 28, prior to that time.
Did you then farm on the dry land, or did you have irrigated?
It was dry land, strictly dry land, wheat and cattle.
Now, about what distance or particular location was that? I think you mentioned that was called the Plainview Community.
Yes, that's right. It's Plainview Community, and it was about 3 miles east of the old Odie Ranch. If you know where that's at, it was just, that's kind of a landmark in Goshen Hole.
Now, when your parents moved onto that farm in 1928, did they buy that land?
No, they leased it from the owners. And by the way, the owners still own that place. It's a family by the name of Nelson. They moved to California, and they're still there. That is, their children, some of them.
Well, at about the time then that you moved, you would have been a teenager, and been in high school at Veteran, was that it?
I started the high school in the fall of 28, yes.
Uh-huh. Did you finish up then at Veteran High School?
Yeah, I graduated from there in 1932.
Between 1928 and 1932 came the stock market crash of 1929, and then the country got into a depression. But when you moved onto that farm, were the crops pretty good, and was there enough rainfall?
They were good at that time. About 3 years after that. I've often thought the drop in prices and things, it was bad. But if we hadn't had the drought, a lot more people would have, I believe, stayed on the farm. But the combination of the two just ruined about everybody.
When your folks started farming, and I suppose you kind of helped out with the farmer, was anybody strip farming at that time in the area?
It was just coming in, strip farming. In fact, not too many were doing it at that time, because I remember we block farmed. But then when the dry season, drought started, everybody switched to strip farming. I think that at that time the government came out with a program that paid you so much an acre to strip farm. That was later, early 30s, after the drought started. But some of them had started prior to that time.
Were you doing any summer fallow?
It was mostly all summer fallow. In the early homestead days, they continuous crop, but then they switched over to summer fallowing. I imagine in the middle 20s or before, prior to that time.
So you were both summer fallowing, but you were doing it in blocks and rather than strip. What about some of the types of farm machinery they were using then? Was it quite a bit different than the machinery that they're using today in terms of how they're following the ground and what they're using and how they're working the ground?
Oh, it was altogether different. Now, when we started in 28, we used horses. Had 8 head of horses on a 2-bottom plow. That's quite an experience. We used to had a group of horses we worked for a week, then we'd go down south, what we call on the open range, on a Saturday, and we'd run horses up and break them on Saturday and Sunday, and Monday we'd hook them up to the plow, work them a week and take them back and change them and get another group. It was, but I think we used horses 1 year, then Dad got a tractor. Of course, those tractors those days, I think it was a 2236 International. Had steel wheels, but that was quite a change from horses.
Well, now, when you plowed that ground out, you mentioned you used a 2-bottom plow and 18 horses. Were you plowing that land out for the first time, or?
No, it had been farmed before. That is, the Lawhead boys, who lived back of us, were farming it at that time. And we just took over the lease from them.
What about once that you had plowed the ground, Ed? What did you do after that to work the... This was summer fallow, you were working?
Working, yeah. Usually we'd disc. And, of course, later years, as the tractors developed, your machinery changed. You had what we called duck feet and chisel plowing and one-way. And there's a few people that still... mowboards, as we call it, and... It's a lot better today the way they farm. They can control the weeds and not disturb the stubble and keep it up on top, you know. A lot better farming methods they have today.
What was moldboard?
That is where you turn the soil over completely, just regular plow.
Is that the same as plowing, yes?
Yeah.
How deep were your plowing? Were you plowing pretty deep? Or?
Oh, no, not about 8 inches, 6 to 8 inches.
Were people using rod weeders?
That came along a little later. I think it came along in the latter 30s. There may have been some in the area, but I don't recall them. I remember now that they had some they pulled with horses, so they had rod weeders then.
When did you usually plant or drill your wheat at that time?
About the same as they do now, latter part of August and first September, in that period in there.
About what kind of yields could you expect? They had a fairly good year.
And I don't think it was too much different than it is now, as far as that goes, providing every moisture and everything was equal, and get 20 to 40 somewhere in there, just depending on the weather and moisture.
Do you you remember any of the prices for wheat that you were getting in those?
Seemed like we first started, we got around $1, $1.08. That'd be in 28, 29. The lowest I remember it got, this is when the Depression started in the early 30s, was 28 cents.
28 cents a bushel. Did that pay for
Not hardly. Of course, you want to remember in those days, the cost of raising any crop, for that goes, was nothing like compared to what it is today. I remember we got fuel, that's for our tractors, we call it tractor fuel, for 6 cents a gallon. And repairs, that type of thing was cheap, and even machinery was cheap those days. Buy a Model T Ford, you know, for $400 or $500, and tractor's comparable. But then when the Depression started, that, of course, that 28 cents, that's the lowest I remember. It gradually worked up after Roosevelt became president, and it slowly worked up. But really, I don't think the farmer came out of as far as economics till in the 40s when things began to boom, and they came out of it. But a lot of difference in today's farming and it was back there. The one of the big differences I can see is a lot of people say, well, we should go back to the good old times, but I don't think they really mean that. When you're on the farm then, you could go to town once every 2 weeks and survive good, you know. Because you had your own meat, you had your own eggs, you had your own butter and milk and cream, and about the only thing you went to town for as far as groceries would be maybe a little canned fruit, flour, salt and pepper and sugar. And your energy on a farm then was wood, coal, and kerosene. You cooked one or maybe all three of them. So the cost maintaining a farm home was nothing like it is today. Your telephone bill on a farm now would be more than what you spent for groceries in them days. So your utilities, you use butane and electricity and what have you. So that's the reason today, I think. And most farms nowadays, I don't think they have their gardens and their cows and their chickens. They possibly raise their own meat, but they buy a lot of their necessities from the store, and that creates kind of a hardship sometimes.
Well, Ed, when you started farming, was it all wheat, or were you trying to raise anything else on your land?
When we first started, and prior to that time, most it was primarily wheat, but they raised, you might say, their own horsepower. That is, they'd try to raise oats and feed for their horses. Of course, when the tractors came along, that wasn't too profitable a crop, only for feed for horses. But primarily in that area, it was wheat.
Once the tractors did come, and what do you recall about in the 1930s, the tractors really started coming on?
Well, I'd say 28, 29, they begin to come in then.
Did more land then get turned over for wheat and less for barley and oats?
Yes. That was when a lot of land was broken out during that period when tractors came in.
Was that perhaps one of the most important factors in making that even more of a wheat country and also increasing the amount of land that was being farmed with the introduction of the tractor?
Oh, I think so, because you take you're farming horses, you could You didn't farm that much land, but after you went, they switched to tractors, you could just, as tractors improved, you could double your acreage, you triple your acreage in the same amount of time that it took you to farm with horses.
But were they concerned at that time, prior to the depression and the drought, were they concerned so much about old contour farming and soil conservation?
I don't think so. I don't think they went through this period of erosion, you know, from the wind, but I think after the drought they became conscious, and during the drought years they planted windbreaks. Some of the old windbreaks are still standing out there.
What was a windbreak? Was that a windbreak of trees?
Trees and brush, different type. They were successful to extent for the area in which they were planted, but I think probably the strip cropping and the contour farming was most effective. They're beginning today even to go to more contour farming, not because of wind erosion, but because of water erosion. And of course, primarily back in the 30s, it was wind.
Well, by the time you graduated in 1932 from high school, did you fully realize that this area, as well as the country, was in a depression?
Of course, at that time, you know, we were teenagers, and maybe we didn't dawn on us as much as it did our parents, but I don't think the depression hit this area as quick as it did in the East. I think primarily because the needs of the farmer weren't as great, so they didn't have to depend on a paycheck to set the table, or they didn't have utility bills to pay, that type of thing. Whereas in the city in the East, they had to meet that bill every week or month or so forth. So I don't think we realized at the time until later on, and that affected this area too, particularly when the prices dropped for their commodities which they were raising. When wheat got down to 28 cents, I think they woke up and said, hey, what's going on, you know?
I recall you said something about worrying about having a suit for graduation.
Oh, yeah. I was looking back on talking to different ones. You know, the young people of that day, they didn't expect nor they didn't demand too much from their parents. I think they just different. And the parents didn't. On the other hand, I think the parents demanded more from their children. Or maybe I shouldn't say demanded, they expected more from their children than the parents do today. I don't know about that, but then at least the children those days, if they knew their parents couldn't possibly afford this or that, they didn't really demand it. They got along without it. And of course, those days when you graduated, you didn't have gowns. Nowadays, you can wear your overhauls or what have you and put a gown on. Nobody knows what you got on. Yeah, I remember when we graduated, we didn't know whether some of them were going to wear suits, some were going to wear overhauls. Didn't know what to do. But my parents, somehow or another, they scrounged up money enough to buy me a suit. I think it was the first suit I ever owned, particularly after I was a teenager. And it's kind of interesting when you get looking back. I was talking to some of my friends that I graduated from high school with, and we were talking about this very thing on the relationship between parents and kids then. And we all agreed that we didn't expect too much of parents, you know, that is, taking care of us and Because at that time, when you got out of school, you, and even while you're in high school, you'd look for an extra job if you weren't needed at home. If you needed at home, of course, that's where you stayed and worked. And you always shared with your parents whatever you made, if they needed it. But times are different now. Young people wouldn't share, but their need is a great, it takes about all they can make to keep themselves going, I think.
Ed, what would have happened if your parents hadn't been able to buy you a suit?
Well, I often thought that I wouldn't even go to graduation, but I probably would have. I don't know. I know I thought about it, but there's only 7 of us in the class, so I don't think it made that much difference.
Could you tell by looking around at the rest of the kids that times were pretty tough for people?
I don't think that you could tell by just looking at them. I don't think it affected the young people that much. They were busy and they had a lot of fun on what they did have, and wasn't too, I never, can't recall any griping of any of the young people because they didn't have this or that or couldn't go here or there. And I drove a school bus the last 3 years I was in high school. Any high school activity we had, if it was at night, we lived clear out on the end of the line, where I'd just make the route, just like I was driving, picking up kids, and then we'd pick up whole families.
You picked up not only the kids?
Kids, but the families. Family. And of those who wanted to go, that'd be their class plays or basketball games or some literary society they were having that night or something. Everybody enjoyed yours. You know, they seemed like people were closer together. They depended on one another more than they do now, I think.
Did you or any kids that you knew felt they really lacked for anything? It had enough to eat for them?
I don't think so. That I can recall in our area, now we all carried our lunches, school. And it may only been peanut butter and a pickle and an apple, but I don't. In the wintertime, some of them would bring milk. I used to swap a peanut butter sandwich for milk, or vice versa. Now, I don't think anybody lacked the. They were used to it. That's the way they were brought up, I guess.
Didn't have much money in your pocket, I don't suppose.
Oh, no. No, you didn't. You could take 35 cents and go to town and buy a hamburger and go to show, you know. And we used to, when we come to town on Saturday nights, we'd, same way at the school bus, it was full of people by the time we got to town.
What about parents, your parents? How do they deal with dropping farm prices and drought years? How do they handle it?
Of course, my parents are both gone now, but of course, most of the people, kind of hard to realize, but that lived during that period are not on the farms anymore. There's a few. But their sons or daughters who are on the farm now, that could remember that period, they kind of course the whole system economics changed, and they went through that period of low prices, not being able to raise anything, particularly on the dry. But I don't think any of them would want to go back to that period where they could buy a hamburger for a dime. I think they'd rather pay a dollar for it and still get good prices for their products, because that gives them a chance to forego a hamburger and buy something else they need.
So did your parents ever talk about leaving the farm in those dry years?
No, but I... most everybody in that area I know, they did leave it for a short time, maybe just for a winter or two, and they'd work out on construction or different jobs, and they'd go back and try to plant a crop. And they just about had to. There's a certain amount of expenses you had to meet, you know, and you couldn't do it not raising any crop. Of course, if like I said before, if the drought hadn't hit, the combination of the two is what really made it tough.
When did that drought hit? Yeah.
I don't recall exactly. I'd say 32-3 in there. Really begin to worsen. And it got so bad that I remember Carl Spencer, who operated the Doty Ranch. The people would summer follow their land, you know, and they wouldn't have, maybe they didn't or didn't have the money enough to maybe weed it, and the tumbleweeds would get knee-high, and he'd put it up for hay. And it made good hay, I guess, if you put it up just right. He'd winter his cattle up, stack it up, you know.
What was it, Ralph? Was it just the lack of rain?
Yes, primarily that's what, well, that was it. It just, when they did get a storm, it was a gully washer, and of course, the lack of rain and the lack of any vegetation on the soil, sometimes pastures would be overgrazed, it'd just blow it out, just pile up, and roads would be full of sand and blow out. If you're ever driving from Fort Laramie to Gray Rocks, you get out about 4 or 5 miles past that one ranch, that road you cut out, that our roads all used to look like that.
Just blow it out, what, 3 or 4 feet?
Yeah. And, of course, later they graded them up and gravel them and that holds them.
Did you get more wind?
Well, I think anytime you have dry weather and you get more wind. Yeah. This spring we had more wind than usual, and it's been unusually dry too. But back in those days, it blow all day. Some days it wouldn't be so hard, but it wouldn't take much of wind to blow dirt. And 1933, I worked over at Veteran in a store, and you could look off to the notch in Goshen Hole, and you could see it in the morning. You'd let down at night. You could see it coming, the dust be in the air, and it was something else. Regular dust storms. Of course, that, what they call the Sebring community out in the Goshen Hole, was, that was, I imagine that time, you know, it was just, there's probably a family on every 320 or at least every section. Pretty thickly populated. Of course, each of them had some land broke out, maybe not all of it, but And when that drought hit, that seemed like that whole country. That, I believe Lou piled up more than any of the area because it's lighter soil out there.
How did you farm? When it got in all the dry conditions and you didn't have much moisture, did you still go out and farm with it?
Yeah, there's some years, there's 2 or 3 years there, I don't think anybody done anything. They just left it lay. As I said, a lot of them went out and worked, and then they accumulated enough, they'd go back and they didn't farm as much. Maybe they'd take some of their better ground, plow it, and hope to get a crop. But it, of course, that period, some of the people, after the drought started, they just quit and left. They moved to, a lot of them moved to Oregon, Washington, some of them went to Idaho, just for the family, you know. They.
What about your own parents? Were they able to stay on the farm?
They stayed through it, and my
once in a while a family would move out and then another family. Did they leave in mass, so to speak, Ed?
Well,
what was the movement?
I think when one started, then the others took a look at it, and there were some families, you didn't even know they'd gone until they drove drive by the place. Other families planned it, and they moved. Now, they. People in the Notch area, the Sebring area, some of them went to Wheatland and a lot of them moved to Torrington. And the people in our area, and they went to Idaho and Oregon and Washington.
Is that because they had relatives back?
No, I think some of them went out there when some of the younger ones and pick fruit and stuff like that, and as a result of that, some of the parents said, well, we'll do that too. So they just loaded their families up, and I know the veteran had their school reunion in July 6th, and there was 4 or 5 of the kids who graduated from veteran whose parents had moved during that period and came back to the reunion. And it was
Did the school itself make any changes or do anything differently because the country was in a depression? Did they reduce the length of the term or anything that they did?
No, I don't think so. Only one thing I can remember when during beet harvest or the people who raised beets, their kids would stay out and help harvest beets. There wasn't nothing said about it. I don't recall whether they excused them. I'm sure they did. But they about had to. You know, it was all hand work. And
did the young people go out and kind of help the parents out? Did they go out and work out and bring in some money to help?
Oh, I think, yes, I think so. Our family did. I'm sure others did too. I know they did because parents stayed on the farm and tried to keep it going, and what little the kids could make, but they couldn't survive and get by.
What would you do, Ed? Just send some money back to the parents or take it back to the house and say, here's $10, $15, $20 to help out?
Yeah, or buy something they needed. You know, I think it's pretty much in our area, it's pretty much that way. That's what kept it going, I think.
Were when kids graduated from high school at that time, what about their future chances of getting a job or even going on to college? Did they feel that the Depression was really taking away some of those opportunities?
Well, undoubtedly it did. But then in this area, there were some that went on to college, and I think if they had the desire, they could find a way to go. Probably more so than now, because it cost them much more to go. Those days, you could work your way through college mainly. But most of them, when I graduated, most of them were, or maybe prior to when I graduated, things were beginning to tighten up. But they more or less planned to continue on farming or ranching, whichever it was. But they did have to get out and get a job. Of course, in this area, they wasn't that kind of, it was just farm work, mostly. They couldn't, I know when some of us graduated, we used to talk about what we wanted to do, and we figured if we could just get a job that we could make about $1,500 to $1,700 a year, we'd have it made. I can remember that's the plan. Now it takes that much a month to get by on.
Did a lot of young people want to stay in the area, or did they want to leave? Was there any feeling among young people at that time that, gosh, conditions aren't very good here, there's not much chance of a job? Did they think about taking off and going back east or going further west?
Oh, I suppose some of them, because those who did go west, like I mentioned before, went to Oregon, Washington, and that area. But I believe all the families that stayed, they wanted to stay in the area. Of course, their parents moved, they eventually followed them. Some of them, you know, were out of school, and they might have been working. Of course, at that time, you remember, they had these CC camps. A lot of the younger boys in the area joined those. And that probably, and they usually tried to send you, they had camps around this area, but they usually, at the time I was in one, they usually sent you out of the area, which was a good experience. And that's where a lot of them got, maybe the area they're in, maybe they stayed there when they got out.
When did you begin with the CCC?
34, I think, or 33. Latter part of 33. We went to New Mexico and backed up to Sheridan or Ranchester, and that was quite an experience. Of course, then, you know, when you went, the purpose of that was to get, it was more, of course, you'd done Forest Service type work, but you had to send the biggest share of your paycheck home. I think the regular pay was $30 a month. You could work up to $45. And you send about two-thirds of it home, which was good. You know, they really didn't need, oh, you need a little spending money because they furnished everything else. So that kept some of the parents going.
Do you think the parents, your parents or other parents, did they feel somewhat bothered by the fact that it took the kids to go out and help them stay on the farm and keep working? Did that seem, do you think that was bothered parents?
I'm sure it did. They wouldn't be parents if it didn't, you know. But sometimes it was just rather a necessity that we're done that way. Of course, after all, you know, They took care of you for a good many years, and what little you could do for a short time, I think, was justifiable.
Ed, did you feel that this was a temporary situation? Most people feel that, well, it's going to be a year or two, and pretty soon we're going to be out of it. Is that feeling, or did people feel that, you know, this is going to go on and on and on?
No, I think they look forward to turn around, because, as I mentioned before, if it hadn't been for the drought, times would have been tough. But they could have held things together, you know. But the drought is the thing that really disrupts the whole area, I think, more so than the depression.
Well, was there any one year in those drought years, was there any one year that was really the worst?
I can't really recall which would be the worst as far as weather, or but it was all bad.
You know, down in the heart of the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma and Texas, Kansas, it was terrible dust bowl. Was there ever any type of conditions that came close to that, where you had dust storms where you virtually couldn't see 10 feet in front of you, or it just literally got dark during the daytime? Did you ever have any of those conditions?
I don't think we had it as bad as they did down there, but we'd have days that the air would be just full of dust, visibility would be down. Of course, I remember used to have the old battery radios, and the air would be so full of electricity, of course your radio wouldn't work. But you could take the ground wire and hold it up to the radio and just be a blue flame, just electricity from the air. We used to do that just to watch it. But it got pretty dusty.
Did those conditions tend to demoralize farmers and farm-wise? Did they feel that?
Oh, I'm sure it was depressing. It couldn't help to be. Even people in town, it was depressing too. But it don't seem like at that particular time, it wouldn't seem like anything could ever grow in, you know. But then you'd get a shower and the wind would go down. Oh, the sand piles would be a flower grow, and so you knew sometime or other it would come back.
Did people farm quite a bit differently after the drought ended and rains returned? Did they change their farming practices quite a bit?
But, yes, they did, but probably not as much as you might think, because they were... Of course, the new type of machinery and bigger tractors, and I'm speaking of dry land now, of course, they stayed with their strip cropping, and the type of machinery they used, any type that would keep these double on top or at least incorporated in the first 2 or 3 inches of soil, that was really the salvation of the drylander. A lot of the soil in this area is light, sandy loam. It would blow if it's given a chance. So,
well, I was wondering, you know, some of that topsoil blew off. Were there areas of where they had lost the topsoil and they couldn't farm it after that?
There are some areas that, especially out in the Notch area where it did blow to what we call hard pan, and it's grassed over, but as far as I don't think it'd be farmable anymore. I can remember we used to it blow so much you'd plow, so you plowed in 8 inches, you could see your plow marks, so you know your topsoil was gone. At the same time, if you happen to be strip cropping then, your summer fallow strip maybe would blow off 4 or 5 inches. And that would be over in your stubble strip or weeds, wherever was there. So there you had strips of land that was low and high in the same field every other strip. And it took a good many years to get that leveled off. It's just too farming. And that was awful rich soil in that where it piled up. Gosh, if you get moisture and get a crop going in that, you had a good crop.
About what time did the drought finally end?
Oh.
Maybe I should retract that. Maybe it's never ended. When did it get?
Well, that particular drought, it began to improve, I think, in 37 and there on up. It's kind of hard to pinpoint, is it? But this year has been about as dry as some of the periods we had back there, except we did have good cover to start the year out with. We just hope we don't have another dry year like we had next year, like we have this year.
You know, in the Midwest of Iowa and Minnesota and Kansas, farmers became a little more, well, I want to say farmers became somewhat militant. They became upset with the government. They organized. In fact, there was a movement called the Farm Holiday Movement. I don't know did any of that ever reach out into this area? Called the Farm Holiday Movement.
I don't recall.
Dairy farmers back there, for example, were dumping milk.
Uh-huh.
And, they were holding their product off the market. Were farmers rebellious at all against the government?
I don't think so. Not like they are even today. Because it seems like everything goes wrong today. The government cut their finger in it, or at least they... Not the farmers think they have, but then whether they have or not, I'm not one to say. But back in the 30s, I don't think most of that generation had been through anything like that. And can't say that it was the government's fault. Of course, they've done a lot to try to bring it out of it. But it was just one of those things where, just like this last surge in land prices we had. I was talking to some farmers up in Minnesota here 3 or 4 weeks ago. We were up there and we had to run across 3 of them and got to talking to them, and they said they were just waiting on their accountant. They're going in to file bankruptcy. And beautiful country. Crops look good. Well, why? Aren't you ready to crops? Yeah, but said that they paid this one of them, gave his story. He paid $1,450 an acre for his farm 10 years ago. And of course, and he says, I've got it down to $750. And he says, I can't sell it for $450. And I don't think they were quite broke, but they couldn't see how they were going to come out on it, so they were going to. They're going to talk to the lending agency and see if they couldn't turn it back and lease it from them.
Well, could farmers sell their land in the 30s then? If a farmer was having something, could he sell his land then?
I don't remember anybody selling anything. I remember a lot of them walked off. I think a lot of the farms in days, they got state loans. They had the state program. So the state wound up owning a lot of the dry land. And later years, when things got better, they resold it for about what they had in it. If you'd had any money, you could really got some cheap farmland.
Well, some people were able to do that, weren't they, in the area? Were able to, one way or the other, come up and get enough money to buy some of the land up?
Yeah. I'm not sure there was. But in our general area, I don't remember any land changing hands. People You could lease all the land you want, or if, like no man's land, a lot of the people left, and usually they went back to the state or some lending agency. You could buy it off of them. I know my folks later, after things settled down, they bought land from insurance companies who had mortgages on it, you know. And it was real reasonable. But it's different now. You wouldn't want to take up a mortgage now. Pick up a mortgage now because...
You know, one of the programs the Roosevelt administration had was a resettlement administration program, in which they resettled farmers onto different lands. Did that ever occur in the area where farmers were able to relocate? Or?
I think to extent, but not here. I think out south of the river, they had some land out there they made into smaller irrigated farms. I think they settled some out in there. I'm not sure they were farmers, but then they were some more or less homestead type openings around. Hastings, Nebraska had one. Several of the farmers from this area took irrigated farms over there, and I think probably that was under that program too.
Yes, I was curious if, you know, like some of the dryland farmers out of the dry, if the government helped to relocate them maybe in irrigated areas.
I don't recall what they did.
Was there any particular farm program that farmers were able to take advantage of in?
Well, they had what the first program that really they probably took advantage of is, of course, they had the old hog program, you know, where they bought the hogs and killed them off, paid them so much a head, or sheep, or what have you. And it's what they call the seed loan program. The farmer didn't have money to buy seed. Well, they loaned the money and they'd buy seed. They had a crop, they'd pay it back. They didn't, they loaned enough for some more seed until the thing got so where they were able to pay it back. Otherwise, a lot of them couldn't have even stayed where they did.
Did most of the farmers feel that the New Deal, the Roosevelt program, for example, that there was called an Agricultural Adjustment Administration, were most of the farmers in favor of those type of government programs to help farmers?
I think they were at that time. Mm-hmm. But that was about the only out they had. But of course, it's more successful the farming became and more profitable. And of course, the farmer kind of independent. He probably felt like we didn't need government programs. But on the other hand, they still have them. Pretty much, some of them are pretty much the same type of program, too. They've had the last 30 years, that is, price support and that type of thing. And some years, for instance, this year, their wheat, if they participate in the program, they can get a loan on it for about 324, and you go sell it 2.5, so that makes a lot of difference to a wheat farmer.
I think the government would pay farmers or guarantee a certain amount for a bushel of wheat if they would reduce their crop acreage at that time?
Well, primarily that's the way it works. You participate in a program and hold your crop acreage down, and then you're eligible for these price support loans.
Well, now, you worked with CCC. How long were you with the Civilian Conservation Corps?
2 years. That was the limit to let you serve. Huh.
Then you got out of that in about, what, 1936?
In the latter part of 35, yeah.
What did you do then? That was in the middle of the Depression still.
Yeah. got out and I got a job at Torrington in a garage, parts van. Then I went to started to work for a gamble store. I never was out of job. I could always find something. Then I worked there a while, and fall of 36, I went over better, worked for Joe Courtney's store. Made the whole sum of $75 a month.
How long did you work in the Courtney store then?
About a year, because I was married, then I went back to Indiana for about 10 years. I got a job back there, and then we came back here in 48. And times had changed, certainly in that 10-year period.
Did you ever go back to the farm then?
Yeah, I moved back on the farm in 48. Then we, of course, then I worked, around 51 or 2, I think it was, maybe 3, I went to work for the ASCS, you know, in Torrington. I worked there until I retired, 78. And I still farm, too, and leased it out then when I didn't farm.
During those years, you had a number of different jobs in the firm. What was the lowest paying job you ever worked for, aside from, let's say, the CCC?
Well, when you didn't get paid anything, we're just helping people, but the lowest job where I was up over, I think it's $4 and a quarter a week for board and room. That was... But you know, that wasn't bad in them days. I got by pretty good on that and had a good time. Of course, didn't have anybody to support himself.
Looking back on those Depression years, do they seem in your mind to be very, very difficult years and tough years?
They would be if you went back to them from the area in which we're in now, but then you kind of grew into it. You rather steeled yourself for from year to year, you know, because you knew what it was like. But I think that's what's so difficult today. People have a good job and getting along fine, and the next day they have no job. Boy, the world comes to an end. In some cases, it's pretty tough. But those days, you kind of demands on weren't so great, and you kind of, from year to year, you kind of got kind of used to doing without and making your own entertainment and what have you. But I'm sure it was a lot tougher on the parents than it was the younger people. But the younger people, you know, they didn't have the worry and the stew of making payments and this type of thing.
I wondered if younger people, though, if they noticed during those years, you mentioned it was tougher on the older, on the parents. Do you think that younger people sense that, though? Did they sense the fact that their parents, you know, if young people are sensitive to what's happening in their house and their parents. I wonder if younger people did feel that their parents, they were more sensitive.
I think so. I'm sure they did, because as I mentioned before, as I recall, friends of mine were discussing, we made very few demands on our parents, you know, for money or this type of thing. And it didn't depend if we need something, we'd get out and find a job. Maybe we only get a 50 cents a day or a dollar a day, but that's where we got anything extra.
you think it left any old lasting marks on people? Let's say your generation that knew the Depression. Yeah. Do you think you were any different because of going through and living through that Depression than, let's say, people aren't there?
Oh, I'm sure it left marks on people, because I can look around the people that I grew up with, and till you get in later years, they were pretty frugal with their earnings, you know. They tried to invest them or hold on to them and not get in debt. And all that was a result, I think, of going through that period. And probably that's one advantage the young people had then. They went through that period, and as things got better, they could always look back and say, hey, this could happen again. Or maybe, too, it trained them that their demands wasn't as great as somebody who had never been through that period. I think even today, this cycle we're in, low economies, particularly on the farm, I think those who survive are going to have a different outlook on those who come in later, you know. Lots of times you get in on when things are real good, and get in on it, you can't see the pitfalls that can happen to you.
Ed, we've covered quite a number of things. We've especially talked a lot about farming. Are there some things that perhaps I haven't mentioned that maybe ought to be mentioned?
Oh, I don't know. We've covered it. I've often thought of the people who went out and homesteaded, of course, the time of the Depression and the drought, these were the people out on these, I'm speaking of the dryland farms, they were still there. They really had the fortitude to stay, you know. They were what they call the pioneers yet. They're looking back on, they created their own entertainment, you might say, during that period.